Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So mental health is more likely to be an issue for teenagers today than it was in 1998. This is according to the Growing Up in Ireland study, which shows today's 13-year-olds are far more vulnerable now to symptoms of depression. So what role is social media playing when it comes to our teens' mental health? Perhaps more interestingly, is that impact different between boys and girls? Well, I'm joined by Dr. Harry Barry, GP and mental health specialist, who's here with me in the studio. And from our Limerick studio, I'm joined by Dr. Anne-Marie Craven from the Department of Psychology at the University of Limerick, and it's lovely to have you both with us again. Now, Harry, we're talking about teenagers here. Maybe that's an important clarification to make.
Yeah.
Why not children too? Why are we specifically focusing on this group?
Because I think the period of adolescence, you know, starts around 12, 13, right up to the age of say, 25, is a very vulnerable period of time because the brain is changing and altering and therefore is very susceptible to the kind of pressures that social media is ideally placed to do. Now, of course, this is destroying children as well. But, you know, in some senses, you know, if we held the line and didn't give children smartphones till they were 13, we wouldn't have to be discussing its effect on small children. Do you know what I mean? But if we insist on giving, as 25% are doing, smartphones to six-year-olds, well, my God, what do we expect? Yeah. Only trouble.
Anne-Marie, just going back to the particular impact on children, you know, Harry describes this almost biological, physiological vulnerability that's there for children of the at this very sensitive age from 13 up. Do you agree with that, that this is when the personality and the person is forming?
Yeah, so adolescence is a really central time for the development of mental health challenges because it's a time where young people are figuring out who they are and it's also a time of a lot of changes. So there's those biological changes with puberty as well as the social changes that occur and transitions from primary to secondary school can be stressful as well. And of course, this is a group as well. They're exposed to more risk factors for poor mental health. So peer pressure becomes a bigger part of their lives and also educational stress. So really there's a whole cluster of reasons why adolescence has always been actually a challenging time for mental health. And that doesn't mean everyone will experience mental health challenges, but it's just a risky time.
Mm-hmm. And what about then, I said at the beginning that we're going to look at the how it affects girls and boys differently. What is the research telling us on that score?
Yeah, so there is some research in the Irish context that suggests some gender differences between boys and girls in terms of mental health during adolescence. And of course, but we're talking about boys and girls here, and gender is more complicated than that, but most of the research looks at it this way. So we can tell from this research that it usually boils down to adolescent girls reporting higher levels of mental health challenges. And it doesn't mean that there aren't boys with similar issues. It just means when you look across the board, maybe the rates are a little bit higher for girls. And it also doesn't mean that mental health issues we often think of as associated with girls, like eating disorders. It doesn't mean we don't see those in boys because we absolutely do, and they can go overlooked because of the gendered stereotype of them. But when we just look at that big picture, maybe girls tend to report slightly higher levels when there's a difference.
Mm-hmm. And we say social media, but really, Harry, I mean, there's so many different elements to that. There's all the different apps, websites, the way people share, you know, whether it's Snapchat, Instagram, WhatsApp, even although I think teenagers don't use WhatsApp as much as the likes of us do.
I think it's really important, though, to a very important distinction at the start that girls traditionally, when they encounter negative material, will internalize. So their natural instinct is to go inside and have kind of negative criticisms and ruminations, which make them always more likely to anxiety, depression, eating disorders, etc. Whereas boys externalize. Do you know what I mean? We'll come to this later. Boys are inclined to go out. They were, in the past, particularly, they were more likely involved in more antisocial behavior, violent behavior, aggression, drinking, risky behavior, all that type of stuff. That's subtly changing and social media has changed that. But I think what's really important is that we try to understand what is the difference, different type of platforms that each use, because that's critical. And I think girls traditionally love social media sharing platforms, i.e. the Snapchat, the TikTok, the Instagram. Instagram, by the way, voted by young people as the most toxic of all apps, do you know what I mean? Which I'm not surprised at, although TikTok is coming along nicely behind it, I would assume. But I think girls are particularly vulnerable to the whole area of facial and bodily comparison. That's always been, girls have always been very aware of appearance. And unfortunately, when the word filter came along, disaster arrived. Because when these companies very smartly gave you the opportunity to change or filter your appearance, then everything became a disaster, really, because what girls could then do is they could filter, on Snapchat, their facial thing, their facial features, or on Instagram, their bodily features, and make them look wonderful. So all these poor girls were looking at these perfect specimens online and saying,
and judging themselves.
Oh my God, could I ever reach that? But of course, it's they're comparing themselves to a totally false picture. And of course, that leads to a lot of internal ruminations, anxiety, depression, self-harm, all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
but that's okay. So that's that's the impact on girls. For boys, then you spoke about externalizing the reaction, and then you said, did you, that this is changing now?
Yeah, what's happening, boys? Well, I think we have to we'll talk about that little change in a minute, but I think what's really important for boys is that boys are involved in different. They're not as keen on the sharing apps as they are on things like YouTube. They're really interested in porn, and they're interested in gaming, and they're interested in misogynist sites. So the one that would scare the pants off me, and if I was a parent, it should scare the pants off you, is that boys are consuming porn at the most alarming amount. And we're getting this now at a very, very young age. This is starting in groups that maybe as low as 9 or 10.
Yeah, we were talking when David Coleman was on with us on Monday. Every time David is on with us, we have at least one, if not more, parents getting in touch saying they have a boy of 11 or 12 who's consuming porn and they don't know what to do
with
it.
And I think what's really important is, like, why are we so anxious about this? Because they're looking at relationships between boys and girls in a totally false way. Porn gives you this crazy idea of this violent, aggressive, nasty, kind of dominant kind of approach to relationships, which boys are now beginning to exert on girls, putting pressure on girls to send them personal images, sharing personal images online. But more seriously for the boys themselves, it starts to kind of really get into them, and they start, for example, it damages their own ability to have sexual relationships, as many therapists out there will agree.
Mm-hmm.
It also is interfering with their ability to have normal relationships with girls. Do you know what I mean? So it's twisting the normal pattern of adolescence. And of course, the more I can retreat into my room with my smartphone or my computer or iPad or whatever, and the more I can go into this online world where I can say game all the time. Do you know what I mean? From a worldwide bit. The more that I can get my kicks through porn, I can get all my contacts. I don't need to go out into the real world. And I've
which
actually had
limits
public,
the social contacts.
Yes,
in
which
the
I've had.
Sense.
I've had at public meetings, people getting up and saying, "What am I going to do? I've got a young boy at home. He won't leave his room. He spends half the night up. Do you know what I mean? We know that he's on gaming, and we know that he's using porn, and we know that they're involved in a lot of hate kind of stuff.
What do you say to them? What's the answer?
Well, my answer, to be honest, really, I feel like an old fuddy-duddy here, but the job of a parent is to be a parent. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, at the age of 18, you stop being a parent, you're becoming a mentor. So I have to say, I would be much tougher. Do you know what I mean? But a lot of mothers particularly are so overprotective. They don't realise they're allowing these kids to go down a dark hole that they possibly will never come back out of.
So what he's saying, remove the devices and switch off the Wi-Fi.
Well, or else get them to leave the house. Do you know what I mean? Find another place. If you want to live your life like this, you're not going to live it with me sheltering and protecting you. But maybe that's very tough. Do you know
very
what I mean?
Tough. Yeah, very tough. Very tough. Anne-Marie, so Harry went through there at the beginning that girls are more, and I know we're generalising here, but let's take it at face value. Girls are more interested in the image sharing type of platform. And then we heard about the book boys, it's the gaming, the pornography, and perhaps YouTube and communicating in that way with people. Do you agree with that?
Well, I would agree broadly that girls and boys often have different patterns of engaging with social media. And of course, there's some similarities as well. But certainly what Harry mentions around sharing images and so on, or sharing activities, this might reinforce a natural tendency of girls to engage more with their peers, right, than boys. So boys might be out playing sport or playing side by side, whereas girls are more relational as a broad generalization. So that might be reflected in how they use social media. And of course, I think the best way of knowing how a young person in your life is using social media, be they a boy or a girl, is actually to ask them in a non-judgmental way, what are you doing or how do you find it? And you might be surprised at how forthcoming people are. Now, of course, I'd agree with Harry that social comparison piece for girls in particular can be very damaging, and certainly the pornography use or consumption for boys is absolutely damaging. But that's not all people use social media for. So I think it's important to know that there can be some benefits for certain groups as well. So you don't want to come in too heavy-handed and talk only about those negative aspects.
Mm-hmm. But the comparison factor here for both boys and girls, that is really difficult when you are at that vulnerable stage from 13 on.
It is. And I should say that the science on social media use, there's a lot of discourse on it, but the actual science is only emerging. So we are only beginning to really understand the impacts in a scientific way. But one potential way it is impactful relates to that social comparison. And comparing yourself to other people is a really normal thing to do. And it's really common in adolescence because you're learning to figure yourself out. So your opportunities for comparison are high enough. You're comparing yourself on academic performance, on athleticism, on appearance, on popularity. And those processes were always there, and they're not going to be eradicated by any sort of restrictions on social media, but they might be reduced because social media amplifies your opportunity to engage in these comparisons. It exposes you to far more people than you see in your everyday life. It exposes you to people who are not really representative of people in real life. And it just gives you lots more opportunities for comparison without much of that in-person feedback either. So if you meet somebody at school and you're comparing your grades on a test or something like that, you might feel you didn't do so well, but they might be able to cheer you up a little bit about it. But you don't get that online. You only get those negative aspects of comparison.
Yeah. And, you know, like we talk so much about all of the contact people have and all the friends they have on these apps. But then you see, and I see Kitty Holland is writing about this as well, in relation to the Growing Up in Ireland survey today. Loneliness is a byproduct of all of this. Isn't it extraordinary? Harry, what do you want to say about that?
I couldn't agree more. I think never have young people. Well, let's take the girls for example versus the boys. The girls, for example, even though theoretically they're sharing all this stuff with all their so-called friends, they're actually not having, the only real relationship is a one-to-one, face-to-face contact, the power of connection. You know, so if you're missing that, it's false, because you're living in this false world. So many, many girls will tell you they're terribly lonely, even though they theoretically have all these friends. And boys in particular will often tell you they're extremely lonely. So loneliness is where we're not communicating face to face with our peers. Do you know what I mean?
So we as parents then need to encourage them to go out and
meet
their friends. Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? One of the things that worries me a little bit, we didn't really mention it, that I'm worried about it particularly with girls, is what I call this mental health contagion. And I don't think we're social media is a wonderful way of spreading things quickly. So, for example, we've always been worried about suicide, and we've always been worried about eating disorders and contagion. But we've never really thought about the possibility that anxiety, for example, and maybe depressive symptoms are being quickly shared along the line through social media. So it almost becomes cool, do you know what I mean?
And to normalizes
be anxious.
It.
So we're actually normalizing. And many, many principals, I think, out there would really agree with me
and
on this. Do you know what I mean?
Evidence in the UK is beginning to support that as well, that idea of contagion, and social media can certainly facilitate that as well.
And that is interesting, because the Growing Up in Ireland study, which I referenced there at the beginning, it has shown that there has, between the proliferation of social media in the last 10 years, there has has been an increase in depressive symptoms amongst that group of people. Now, you could say that is because of the isolation, the comparisons and so on, or is it a symptom of contagion? And probably, Anne-Marie, we don't have the data on that yet.
No, we don't. And I suppose I'd be very careful. We are talking about social media here. And I want to be very clear that it's one part of the tapestry of adolescent life. That is their real life relationships with peers, siblings, parents. It's their socioeconomic background. It's their school achievement. It's the school climate. It's the environment. It's everything. Social media is one part of that puzzle, and we're beginning to get the evidence on it. So my only fear when we talk about social media is it's an easy thing for parents to jump on as something they need to solve, and it's an important one, but I wouldn't forget about what else might be going on. So it's really important to talk about what else might be going on at school or at home as well. And when we talk about social media too, we often talk about adolescents' use of it. But I was reflecting today on how we don't reflect on our own use. So if I am posting photos of my child from the day they're born online, how can I turn around to my teenager and say, you need to put down the phone? Because they've grown up online, you have shared them online, but then you turn around and say, you need to spend more time with your friends. So I think modelling and demonstrating the behaviour we want to see, unfortunately, does have to be part of any solution.
Yeah, that's really good advice. You've got
very
to,
good advice.
Got to do
totally,
what you say,
totally
right?
Totally agree with that. Couldn't agree more with that one.
You'll have to give up the Instagram, Harry.
No, I'm afraid I wouldn't be a really big user there now. But you know, one really important thing for me in all of this is that if you look at the figures, and I did it in self-acceptance back in 2019, I was sounding a warning bell. And 5-6 years later, we're actually finally beginning to cop on. And more parents are actually beginning to come around and say, hold on a minute, what's going on here? What can we do? And there is an element out there of almost throwing the hands up in the air. There's no point. It's gone. The
but there
horse
is a point,
bolted,
you're saying. There is a point.
There is a huge point.
Delay buying the phone for them and get them outside.
I'm going to give a few quick tips here. Do you know what I mean? All primary and secondary schools, full stop, with the help of the Department of Education, should have clear lockers, no phones in their schools from one end of the day to the other. At least give the kids a chance to talk to each other. Secondly, regulators have to start regulating. And here's a great tip for parents. If 20% of parents change the behaviour, the big companies will change. That's the golden rule. Thirdly, when parents have a major role here, and I really mean that, you have to get stuck in. You wouldn't give your child, a 10-year-old, keys to your car and tell him just go and learn. Don't give them a phone for the 13. And last, and I love this one, do you know what I mean? All devices in central location, including our devices, by 9:30 at night, no rules and penalties ensue.
There you go. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Harry Barry and Anne-Marie Craven. Now, the gathering standing by to chew over the week that was. That's after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.